Now she had been at home a year, looking after her sick mother. She always dressed up in fine clothes, though her old mother and she had sunk into such poverty that they went every day to Fyodor Pavlovich's kitchen for soup and bread, which Marfa gave readily. Yet, though the young woman came up for soup, she had never sold any of her dresses, and one of these even had a long train, a fact which Alishor had learned from Rakitin, who always knew everything that was going on in the town. He had forgotten it as soon as he heard it, but now, on reaching the garden, he remembered the dress with the train, raised his head, which had been bowed in thought, and came upon something quite unexpected. Over the hurdle in the garden, Dmitri, mounted on something, was leaning forward, gesticulating violently, beckoning to him, obviously afraid to utter a word for fear of being overheard. Alishor ran up to the hurdle. "It's a good thing you looked up. I was nearly shouting to you," Mitya said in a joyful, hurried whisper. "Climb in here quickly. How splendid that you've come. I was just thinking of you." Alishor was delighted too, but he did not know how to get over the hurdle. Mitya put his powerful hand under his elbow to help him jump. Tucking up his cassock, Alishor leapt over the hurdle with the agility of a bare-legged street urchin. "Well done. Now come along," said Mitya in an enthusiastic whisper. "Where?" whispered Alishor, looking about him and finding himself in a deserted garden with no one near but themselves. The garden was small, but the house was at least 50 paces away. "There's no one here." "Why do you whisper?" asked Alishor.
"Why do I whisper?
Deuce take it," cried Dmitri at the top of his voice. "You see what silly tricks nature plays one. I am here in secret, and on the watch. I'll explain later on, but, knowing it's a secret, I began whispering like a fool, when there's no need. Let us go. Over there. Till then be quiet. I want to kiss you. Glory to God in the world, glory to God in me. I was just repeating that, sitting here, before you came." The garden was about 3 acres in extent, and planted with trees only along the fence at the four sides. There were apple trees, maples, limes and birch trees. The middle of the garden was an empty grass space, from which several hundredweight of hay was carried in the summer. The garden was let out for a few rubles for the summer. There were also plantations of raspberries and currants and gooseberries laid out along the sides. A kitchen garden had been planted lately near the house. Dmitri led his brother to the most secluded corner of the garden. There, in a thicket of lime trees and old bushes of black currant, elder, snowball, tree, and lilac, there stood a tumble-down green summer house, blackened with age. Its walls were of lattice work, but there was still a roof which could give shelter. God knows when this summer house was built. There was a tradition that it had been put up some 50 years before by a retired colonel called von Schmidt, who owned the house at that time. It was all in decay, the floor was rotting, the planks were loose, the woodwork smelled musty. In the summer house there was a green wooden table fixed in the ground, and round it were some green benches upon which it was still possible to sit. Alishor had at once observed his brother's exhilarated condition, and on entering the arbor he saw half a bottle of brandy and a wine glass on the table.
"That's brandy," Mitya laughed.
"I see your look, he's drinking again." "Distrust the apparition. Distrust the worthless, lying crowd, and lay aside thy doubts. I'm not drinking, I'm only indulging, as that pig, your Akitin, says. He'll be a civil counselor one day, but he'll always talk about indulging. Sit down. I could take you in my arms, Alishor, and press you to my bosom till I crush you, for in the whole world, in reality, in real, can you take it in? I love no one but you." He uttered the last words in a sort of exaltation. "No one but you and one jade I have fallen in love with, to my ruin. But being in love doesn't mean loving. You may be in love with a woman and yet hate her. Remember that. I can talk about it gaily still. Sit down here by the table and I'll sit beside you and look at you, and go on talking.
You shall keep quiet and I'll go on talking, for the time has come. But on reflection, you know, I'd better speak quietly, for here, you can never tell what ears are listening. I will explain everything, as they say, the story will be continued. Why have I been longing for you? Why have I been thirsting for you all these days, and just now? It's 5 days since I've cast anchor here, because it's only to you I can tell everything, because I must, because I need you, because tomorrow I shall fly from the clouds, because tomorrow life is ending and beginning. Have you ever felt, have you ever dreamt of falling down a precipice into a pit? That's just how I'm falling, but not in a dream. And I'm not afraid, and don't you be afraid. At least, I am afraid, but I enjoy it. It's not enjoyment though, but ecstasy. Damn it all, whatever it is. A strong spirit, a weak spirit, a womanish spirit, whatever it is. Let us praise nature. You see what sunshine, how clear the sky is, the leaves are all green, it's still summer, 4 o'clock in the afternoon and the stillness. Where were you going? I was going to father's, but I meant to go to Katerina Ivanovna's first. To her, and to father. Oh, what a coincidence. Why was I waiting for you? Hungering and thirsting for you in every cranny of my soul and even in my ribs? Why, to send you to father and to her, Katerina Ivanovna, so as to have done with her and with father. To send an angel. I might have sent anyone, but I wanted to send an angel. And here you are on your way to see father and her. Did you really mean to send me? Cried Alisha with a distressed expression. Stay. You knew it and I see you understand it all at once. But be quiet for a time. Don't be sorry, and don't cry. Dmitri stood up, thought a moment, and put his finger to his forehead. She's asked you, written to you a letter or something, that's why you're going to her? You wouldn't be going except for that? Here is her note. Alisha took it out of his pocket. Mitya looked through it quickly. And you were going the back way? Oh, gods, I thank you for sending him by the back way, and he came to me like the golden fish to the silly old fisherman in the fable. Listen, Alisha, listen, brother. Now I mean to tell you everything, for I must tell someone. An angel in heaven I've told already, but I want to tell an angel on earth. You are an angel on earth. You will hear and judge and forgive. And that's what I need, that someone above me should forgive. Listen. If two people break away from everything on earth and fly off into the unknown, or at least one of them, and before flying off or going to ruin he comes to someone else and says, do this for me, some favor never asked before that could only be asked on one's deathbed, would that other refuse, if he were a friend or a brother? I will do it. But tell me what it is, and make haste, said Alisha. Make haste. H.M. Don't be in a hurry, Alisha, you hurry and worry yourself. There's no need to hurry now. Now the world has taken a new turning. Ah, Alisha, what a pity you can't understand ecstasy. But what am I saying to him? As though you didn't understand it. What an ass I am. What am I saying? Be noble, oh man, who says that? Alisha made up his mind to wait. He felt that, perhaps, indeed, his work lay here. Mitya sank into thought for a moment, with his elbow on the table and his head in his hand. Both were silent. Alisha, said Mitya, you're the only one who won't laugh. I should like to begin, my confession, with Schiller's Hymn to Joy, and Die Freude. I don't know German, I only know it's called that. Don't think I'm talking nonsense because I'm drunk. I'm not a bit drunk. Brandy's all very well, but I need 2 bottles to make me drunk, Sile news with his rosy fizz upon his stumbling ass. But I've not drunk a quarter of a bottle, and I'm not Sile news. I'm not Sile news, though I am strong, for I've made a decision once for all. Forgive me the pun. You'll have to forgive me a lot more than puns too, day. Don't be uneasy. I'm not spinning it out. I'm talking sense, and I'll come to the point in a minute. I won't keep you in suspense. Stay, how does it go? In Russian, silen. He raised his head, thought a minute, and began with enthusiasm, wild and fearful in his cavern hid the naked troglodyte, and the homeless nomad wandered laying waste the fertile plain. Menacing with spear and arrow in the woods the hunter strayed. Woe to all poor wretches stranded on those cruel and hostile shores. From the peak of high Olympus came the mother Ceres down, seeking in those savage regions her lost daughter Proserpine. But the goddess found no refuge, found no kindly welcome there, and no temple bearing witness to the worship of the gods. From the fields and from the vineyards came no fruits to deck the feasts, only flesh of blood-stained victims smoldered on the altar, fires, and where Ea the grieving goddess turns her melancholy gaze, sunk in vilest degradation man his loathsomeness displays Mitya broke into sobs and seized Alishor's hand. My dear, in degradation now, too. There's a terrible amount of suffering for man on earth, a terrible lot of trouble. Don't think I'm only a brute in an officer's uniform, wallowing in dirt and drink. I hardly think of anything but of the degraded man, if only I'm not lying. I pray God I'm not lying and showing off. I think about that man because I am that man myself. Would he purge his soul from vileness and attain to light and worth, he must turn and cling forever to his ancient Mother Earth. But the difficulty is how am I to cling forever to Mother Earth? I don't kiss her. I don't cleave to her bosom. Am I to become a peasant or a shepherd? I go on and I don't know whether I'm going to shame or to light and joy. That's the trouble, for everything in the world is a riddle. And whenever I've happened to sink into the vilest degradation, and it's always been happening, I always read that poem about Ceres and man. Has it reformed me? Never. For I'm a Karamazov. For when I do leap into the pit, I go headlong with my heels up, and am pleased to be falling in that degrading attitude, and pride myself upon it. And in the very depths of that degradation I begin a hymn of praise. Let me be accursed. Let me be vile and base, only let me kiss the hem of the veil in which my God is shrouded. Though I may be following the devil, I am thy son, O Lord, and I love thee, and I feel the joy without which the world cannot stand. Joy everlasting fostereth the soul of all creation, it is her secret ferment fires the cup of life with flame. Tis at her beck the grass hath turned each blade towards the light and solar systems have evolved from chaos and dark night, filling the realms of boundless space beyond the sage's sight. At bounteous nature's kindly breast, all things that breathe drink joy, and birds and beasts and creeping things all follow where she leads. Her gifts to man are friends in need, the wreath, the foaming must, to angels, vision of God's throne. To insects, sensual lust. But enough poetry. I am in tears, let me cry. It may be foolishness that everyone would laugh at. But you won't laugh. Your eyes are shining, too. Enough poetry. I want to tell you now about the insects to whom God gave sensual lust. To insects, sensual lust. I am that insect, brother, and it is said of me specially. All we Karamazovs are such insects, and, angel as you are, that insect lives in you, too, and will stir up a tempest in your blood. Tempests, because sensual lust is a tempest worse than a tempest. Beauty is a terrible and awful thing. It is terrible because it has not been fathomed and never can be fathomed, for God sets us nothing but riddles. Here the boundaries meet and all contradictions exist side by side. I am a cultivated man, brother, but I've thought a lot about this. It's terrible what mysteries there are. Too many riddles weigh men down on earth. We must solve them as we can, and try to keep a dry skin in the water. Beauty. I can't endure thought that a man of lofty mind and heart begins with the ideal of the Madonna and ends with the ideal of Sodom. What's still more awful is that a man with the ideal of Sodom in his soul does not renounce the ideal of the Madonna, and his heart may be on fire with that ideal, genuinely on fire, just as in his days of youth and innocence. Yes, Man is broad, too broad, indeed. I'd have him narrower. The devil only knows what to make of it. What to the mind is shameful is beauty and nothing else to the heart. Is the beauty in Sodom? Believe me, that for the immense mass of mankind beauty is found in Sodom. Did you know that secret? The awful thing is that beauty is mysterious as well as terrible. God and the devil are fighting there and the battlefield is the heart of man. But a man always talks of his own ache. Listen, now to come to facts. Chapter 4, The Confession of a Passionate Heart, in anecdote. I was leading a wild life then. Father said just now that I spent several thousand rubles in seducing young girls. That's a swinish invention, and there was nothing of the sort. And if there was, I didn't need money simply for that. With me money is an accessory, the overflow of my heart, the framework. Today she would be my lady, tomorrow a wench out of the streets in her place. I entertained them both. I threw away money by the handful on music, rioting, and gypsies. Sometimes I gave it to the ladies, too, for they'll take it greedily, that must be admitted, and be pleased and thankful for it. Ladies used to be fond of me, not all of them, but it happened. But I always liked side, paths, little dark back, alleys behind the main road, there one finds adventures and surprises, and precious metal in the dirt. I am speaking figuratively, brother. In the town I was in, there were no such back, alleys in the literal sense, but morally there were. If you were like me, you'd know what that means. I loved vice, I loved the ignominy of vice. I loved cruelty, am I not a bug, am I not a noxious insect? In fact to Karamazov. Once we went, a whole lot of us, for a picnic, in 7 sledges. It was dark, it was winter, and I began squeezing a girl's hand, and forced her to kiss me. She was the daughter of an official, a sweet, gentle, submissive creature. She allowed me much in the dark. She thought, poor thing, that I should come next day to make her an offer. I was looked upon as a good match, too. But I didn't say a word to her for 5 months. I used to see her in a corner at dances. We were always having dances, her eyes watching me. I saw how they glowed with fire, a fire of gentle indignation. This game only tickled that insect lust I cherished in my soul. 5 months later she married an official and left the town, still angry, and still, perhaps, in love with me. Now they live happily. Observe that I told no one. I didn't boast of it. Though I'm full of low desires, and love what's low, I'm not dishonorable. You're blushing, your eyes flashed. Enough of this filth with you. And all this was nothing much, wayside blossoms a lap all to cock. Though the cruel insect had already grown strong in my soul. I've a perfect album of reminiscences, brother. God bless them, the darlings. I tried to break it off without quarreling. And I never gave them away, I never bragged of one of them. But that's enough. You can't suppose I brought you here simply to talk of such nonsense. No, I'm going to tell you something more curious, and don't be surprised that I'm glad to tell you. Instead of being ashamed. You say that because I blushed, Alishaw said suddenly. I wasn't blushing at what you were saying or at what you've done. I blushed because I am the same as you are. You? Come, that's going a little too far. No, it's not too far, said Alishaw warmly, obviously the idea was not a new one. The ladder's the same. I'm at the bottom step, and you're above, somewhere about the 13th. That's how I see it. But it's all the same. Absolutely the same in kind. Anyone on the bottom step is bound to go up to the top one. Then one ought not to step on at all. Anyone who can help it had better not. But can you? I think not. Hush, Alishaw, hush, darling. I could kiss your hand, you touch me so. That rogue Russian could has a knife for men. She told me once that she'd devour you one day. There, there, I won't. From this field of corruption fouled by flies, let's pass to my tragedy, also befouled by flies, that is, by every sort of vileness. Although the old man told lies about my seducing innocence, there really was something of the sort in my tragedy, though it was only once, and then it did not come off. The old man who has reproached me with what never happened does not even know of this fact. I never told anyone about it. You're the first, except Ivan. Of course, Ivan knows everything. He knew about it long before you. But Ivan's a tomb. Ivan's a tomb? Alisha listened with great attention. I was lieutenant in a line regiment, but still I was under supervision, like a kind of convict. Yet I was awfully well received in the little town. I spent money right and left. I was thought to be rich, I thought so myself. But I must have pleased them in other ways as well. Although they shook their heads over me, they liked me. My colonel, who was an old man, took a sudden dislike to me. He was always down upon me, but I had powerful friends, and, moreover, all the town was on my side, so he couldn't do me much harm. I was in fault myself for refusing to treat him with proper respect. I was proud. This obstinate old fellow, who was really a very good sort, kind, hearted and hospitable, had had two wives, both dead. His first wife, who was of a humble family, left a daughter as unpretentious as herself. She was a young woman of 24 when I was there, and was living with her father and an aunt, her mother's sister. The aunt was simple and illiterate, the niece was simple but lively. I like to say nice things about people. I never knew a woman of more charming character than Agafya. Fancy, her name was Agafya Ivanovna. And she wasn't bad, looking either, in the Russian style, tall, stout, with a full figure, and beautiful eyes, though a rather coarse face. She had not married, although she had had two suitors. She refused them, but was as cheerful as ever. I was intimate with her, not in that way, it was pure friendship. I have often been friendly with women quite innocently. I used to talk to her with shocking frankness, and she only laughed. Many women like such freedom, and she was a girl too, which made it very amusing. Another thing, one could never think of her as a young lady. She and her aunt lived in her father's house with a sort of voluntary humility, not putting themselves on an equality with other people. She was a general favorite, and of use of everyone, for she was a clever dressmaker. She had a talent for it. She gave her services freely without asking for payment, but if anyone offered her payment, she didn't refuse. The colonel, of course, was a very different matter. He was one of the chief personages in the district. He kept open house, entertained the whole town, gave suppers and dances. At the time I arrived and joined the battalion, all the town was talking of the expected return of the colonel's second daughter, a great beauty, who had just left a fashionable school in the capital. This second daughter is Katerina Ivanovna, and she was the child of the second wife, who belonged to a distinguished general's family, although, as I learnt on good authority, she too brought the colonel no money. She had connections, and that was all. There may have been expectations, but they had come to nothing. Yet, when the young lady came from boarding school on a visit, the whole town revived. Our most distinguished ladies, two excellencies and a colonel's wife, and all the rest following their lead, at once took her up and gave entertainments in her honor. She was the belle of the balls and picnics, and they got up tableaux vivants in aid of distressed governesses. I took no notice, I went on as wildly as before, and one of my exploits at the time set all the town talking. I saw her eyes taking my measure one evening at the battery commander's, but I didn't go up to her, as though I disdained her acquaintance. I did go up and speak to her at an evening party not long after. She scarcely looked at me, and compressed her lips scornfully. "Wait a bit. I'll have my revenge," thought I. I behaved like an awful fool on many occasions at that time, and I was conscious of it myself. What made it worse was that I felt that Katenka was not an innocent boarding school miss, but a person of character, proud and really high, principled. Above all, She had education and intellect, and I had neither. You think I meant to make her an offer? No, I simply wanted to revenge myself, because I was such a hero and she didn't seem to feel it. Meanwhile, I spent my time in drink and riot, till the lieutenant, colonel, put me under arrest for 3 days. Just at that time father sent me 6,000 rubles in return for my sending him a deed giving up all claims upon him, settling our accounts, so to speak, and saying that I wouldn't expect anything more. I didn't understand a word of it at the time. Until I came here, Alishaw, till the last few days, indeed, perhaps even now, I haven't been able to make head or tail of my money affairs with father. But never mind that, we'll talk of it later. Just as I received the money, I got a letter from a friend telling me something that interested me immensely. The authorities, I learned, were dissatisfied with our lieutenant, colonel. He was suspected of irregularities, in fact, his enemies were preparing a surprise for him. And then the commander of the division arrived, and kicked up the devil of a shindy. Shortly afterwards he was ordered to retire. I won't tell you how it all happened. He had enemies, certainly. Suddenly there was a marked coolness in the town towards him and all his family. His friends all turned their backs on him. Then I took my first step. I met Agafya Ivanovna, with whom I'd always kept up a friendship, and said, "Do you know there's a deficit of 4,500 rubles of government money in your father's accounts?" "What do you mean? What makes you say so? The general was here not long ago, and everything was all right." "Then it was, but now it isn't." She was terribly scared. "Don't frighten me," she said. "Who told you so?" "Don't be uneasy," I said, "I won't tell anyone. You know I'm as silent as the tomb." I only wanted, in view of possibilities, to add, that when they demand that 4,500 rubles from your father, and he can't produce it, he'll be tried, and made to serve as a common soldier in his old age, unless you like to send me your young lady secretly. I've just had money paid me. I'll give her 4,000, if you like, and keep the secret religiously." "Ah, you scoundrel," that's what she said. "You wicked scoundrel. How dare you?" She went away furiously indignant, while I shouted after her once more that the secret should be kept sacred. Those two simple creatures, Agafya and her aunt, I may as well say at once, behaved like perfect angels all through this business. They genuinely adored their Katya, thought her far above them, and waited on her, hand and foot. But Agafya told her of our conversation. I found that out afterwards. She didn't keep it back, and of course that was all I wanted. Suddenly the new major arrived to take command of the battalion. The old lieutenant, colonel, was taken ill at once, couldn't leave his room for 2 days, and didn't hand over the government money. Dr. Kravchenko declared that he really was ill. But I knew for a fact, and had known for a long time, that for the last 4 years the money had never been in his hands except when the commander made his visits of inspection. He used to lend it to a trustworthy person, a merchant of our town called Trifonov, an old widower, with a big beard and gold-rimmed spectacles. He used to go to the fair, do a profitable business with the money, and return the whole sum to the colonel, bringing with it a present from the fair, as well as interest on the loan. But this time, I heard all about it quite by chance from Trifonov's son and heir, a driveling youth and one of the most vicious in the world. This time, I say, Trifonov brought nothing back from the fair. The lieutenant, colonel, flew to him. "I've never received any money from you, and couldn't possibly have received any." That was all the answer he got. So now our lieutenant, colonel, is confined to the house, with a towel round his head, while they're all three busy putting ice on it. All at once an orderly arrives on the scene with the book and the order to hand over the battalion money immediately, within 2 hours. He signed the book, I saw the signature in the book afterwards, stood up, saying he would put on his uniform, ran to his bedroom, loaded his double-barreled gun with a service bullet, took the boot off his right foot, fixed the gun against his chest, and began feeling for the trigger with his foot. But Agafya, remembering what I had told her, had her suspicions. She stole up and peeped into the room just in time.